Well, then you're live.
Hi, this is Mona Lisa, and I'm an addict. This is the 50th Anniversary History Conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 3rd to the 5th, 2003. The recordings from this conference belong to the public domain. Our next speaker is Doreen P. Thank you very much for agreeing to an interview with us and for attending the History Conference. It is such a privilege and an honor to meet you. I've heard so many things about you in my little short 6.5 years in the program. Got to be actually sitting in the room with one of the NA icons. And not only am I blessed in that respect to have the opportunity to interview you, my sponsor is also, I consider, an icon in this program, too. Wanda has 18 years, and there's so many things that I've taken for granted before I attended this conference. You know, the availability of meetings, having sponsors with time. I didn't realize how things were different for the people that came before us, the people like yourself, when there were no meetings, when you had to start your own. I can't conceive of a time when there was no basic text, when there was no literature. God, and for you all to stay clean with just your faith, I guess, it just seems so phenomenal to me. So I just kind of like to hear your take on that, on being able to, what it was like when you first got to Narcotics Anonymous.
Well, I think, like I explained to you when I was talking downstairs, I started out in the other fellowship, you know. And all I knew was that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know. And I happened to run into a fellow addict that I knew from years back, you know. And he looked so good, and he was so clean and everything. And, of course, I wanted to know what happened, you know, how to get yourself straight and everything. And I thought I was doing fine, you know, because alcohol is accepted by society, you know, and it was all right to drink. But, I mean, if you was a dope fiend, you was just a low down, you know. And he was looking good, you know, and I asked him, you know, what's he doing for himself? So he explained to me, you know, that he'd been doing fine and blah, blah, blah. And he happened to have this little black book in his hand. You know, and it was a day-by-day stool book, I think it was, from AA. And he told me that he was in this fellowship and everything, and I looked at the book, and I liked the readings in the book, you know. So he says, well, why don't you, you know, come and go to a meeting with me, you know. And I went to the first meeting, and the first time in my life I had been around anybody that was talking about themselves. I'm used to being around people who talk about people. I'm going to help you talk about everybody in here. But, I mean, you stay out of my business. I'm not going to let you know my business. And when I heard this man speak, you know, it really did something to me. You know, and this man talking about himself like that, you know. And I just couldn't get over that, you know. And the things that he was saying about himself, you know. And I asked him, you know, to go with him the next day, the next night, to another meeting, you know. And I went to another meeting, AA meeting with him, and I started going to the fellowship of AA, and I stopped drinking and everything. And from there, I started going to church and everything, but and I liked church, but then again, I was getting that holier than thou, and, you know, I mean, I really didn't feel like that, but, you know, I joined the church and everything. I said, well, man, you know, something just ain't right here, you know. But I was in that fellowship I was in AA for about 2 years, you know. And somebody told me about this drug meeting that was at the VA hospital, the Veterans Hospital in D.C. And I went up to that meeting, you know, and it was in a great big room downstairs, you know, well lit it and everything, you know. And when I went into there, we all were sitting in the hall, and they said, meeting time. And when they said meeting time, you know, they opened this door and went in this great big room, you know, it was well lit and everything. And when we got in, they cut out all the lights, you know, and they turned on a little lamp light that was on the desk. And every time somebody talked, you had to strain yourself, you know, to see who it was that was talking, you know. And I felt so uncomfortable because I had been brought out of the dark into the light, and Amy, you know, the room was literally built. You could see who was talking and things like that, you know. And I felt uncomfortable, you know. But when the meeting was over, I got up and I was coming out of the room and I looked over at the table and they had some literature over on the table. And some of the literature they had was this white book, any white book, you know. And I picked that up, you know, and started reading, and I liked it from the beginning from what I was reading, you know. And I noticed that they had the 12 tradition and 12 steps, but it was the AA 12 tradition, AA 12 steps that was hanging up there, you know. And I read the white book, and I liked what I was reading and everything. And I started talking to this fella, you know. He works at World Service now. Anthony Edmonds, you know, Anthony E., you know. And we started talking, and he come down to my building, and we called out to California, and we talked to Jimmy K., you know. And that's when Jimmy K. explained everything to us, and they sent us our first starter kit in D.C. About how to run the meetings and things, you know. And we started running meetings in the aftercare center that I was working in at that time, you know. And we wanted to condense the reading. And he said, no, they are non-negotiable. They have to be read in the entirety the way they were. And I went back and I had a little argument out with people because, you know, we as addicts, we like to talk, you know. And they said, well, that's too much. I said, well, he said that we could stretch the meetings an hour and a half, you know. And so we did that, you know. And that's how NA got started in D.C., you know. And we've been going ever since, strong in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. came in together. We had our area service together and everything until everybody started growing and then started spreading out. Maryland got to Maryland, Virginia had their own area service, and D.C. had their own as we began to grow.
Well, I noticed from the other people that were sharing today, too, that I guess in the beginning all of the groups were small and so a small in number. But so when you started, I know you were small in numbers, but were there any other black females that were getting clean at the same time you came in?
Yes, there was. In D.C., there was Carmelita. I know we heard of Carmelita C. Carmelita W. And then I met Dot T, and who else? Women, you know, in D.C. start coming in little by little, you know, to the meetings, you know. And then, of course, I worked in a drug center, so I had, you know, a lot of women that come in, you know, to, you know, that they had to come to meetings, you know, and set that up. And we begin to start growing like from there. And then as we begin to grow and we begin to go to different places like New York, Baltimore, and Virginia, you know, other women begin to come in and everything. I met Blaze, Dot T, you know, and all up through New York, New Jersey, and, you know, going to different conventions and things, you know.
Also with us is my sponsor, Wanda B. So, and thank you for joining us too, but I want to come get your take on things too.
Hi, I'm Wanda and I'm an addict.
Hi, Wanda.
And I just wanted to say that it's just an honor to finally meet you, Doreen. Like I was sharing before we started this, as far as I can remember, I was the first black female to come into the fellowship of NA in Nashville and stay clean. And actually, there weren't any other blacks. There is a guy that's still clean now. And, you know, I let that be a reason for me going back out and using. When I first got clean, I looked at the differences. And I said, there's no more blacks. And, you know, actually, my daddy said that this was a white disease and that it wasn't a black disease and that it was nothing wrong with me. And I wanted to believe that, so I didn't stay. Mm-hmm. But I got high with everybody, you know, black and white alike. And so when I came back in, because the drugs did drive me back, you know, mm-hmm. when I came back in, there still weren't any black people here, but I knew I had to stay because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, mm-hmm. you know. And the streets had beat my ass, mm-hmm. and I just had to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn to get along with all different kinds of people, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't come from a lifestyle of being sheltered where I was raised with only blacks. You know, I was raised with all kinds of people, so the nature of the disease had me thinking that I could only be around certain kinds of people in order to recover. And, of course, that's just not true, but I know that the disease had me in its grip. And so, anyway, I stayed clean, and I, too, worked in, you know, we get clean and we want to save everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, so I started working in treatment also.
Mm-hmm.
And people started coming in and staying clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that some of my white friends used to say, why don't the black people stay clean? Why don't the black people? And I would say, I don't know. I don't know why they don't, you know. And I didn't know. You know, it just wasn't time here.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know is that after I had about a year clean, I went to a convention up in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
and that was when I first saw Dot T. I mm-hmm. met Dot T, and mm-hmm. that was the first black woman with a lot of clean time,
mm-hmm.
and I just cried.
Mm-hmm.
I cried at that convention mm-hmm. just to meet somebody, because it was getting depressing down mm-hmm. south down here. I'm mm-hmm. serious, you know, because I wouldn't meet any black people with
mm-hmm.
clean time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what is this? Maybe my daddy was right. Maybe
mm-hmm.
I'm just weird.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm the weird black person that got this white disease, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I have to live with it. And
mm-hmm.
when I went up north there and met Dot, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was relief
yeah.
for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, I went to the World Convention in New Orleans and
mm-hmm.
heard Doreen, heard you
mm-hmm.
speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt even more relief, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you had years and years,
mm-hmm.
you know. So that was just icing on the cake for
mm-hmm,
me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just been, you know, more and more now, a thing that I have seen here in Nashville that saddens me is that it seems like we have separated our areas
mm-hmm.
along racial lines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now that saddens me, but, and that may just be my vision. Maybe that's just something I see, but...
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, that's something that looks that way to me in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most of us still overlook that. We go to meetings across the area lines,
mm-hmm.
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we visit groups
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just do what we need to do to stay clean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Wanda. Gosh, look, I so much I want to ask you. You know, at the time, I guess, that we're undergoing or going through times, we don't realize that they're going to be history-making times, because I'm sure in 1969 you did not think that you were doing something that was going to be historical,
mm-hmm.
you know, because to be sitting here talking to a person who was instrumental in starting NA groups is just, I mean, that's just wild for me. And to know that, you know, you talk with Jimmy Kay. I mean,
mm-hmm.
like, I guess like you and I sitting here, I mean,
yeah,
it was
right.
just, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, me and my sponsor talk
mm-hmm.
every day.
Mm-hmm.
And to know somebody that had that kind of relationship
mm-hmm.
with people who started this fellowship
mm-hmm.
is just so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, do you ever realize what that means to the people like myself that have come behind people like you and Jim Kay?
You know, I don't know. I never even give it a thought. I just do what I have to do, you know. And I think what really happened with me is that when I started working in a treatment center, and I had to deal with a lot of people that knew me when.
Mm-hmm.
You understand me? And they would let me know that they knew me when, you know. And I had to say what I mean what I said, and I had
mm-hmm.
to follow through,
mm-hmm.
regardless of my feelings. You know, or, you know, I remember when I was working in a halfway house, you know, and I worked in a halfway house, and what happened, I was a counselor there. And there was a lot of girls that came in the halfway house that, my peers, you know, I done got dope with, I done hustled with, exchanged money with, and the whole gamut, you know. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in this house telling them about the rules of the house and what they got to do, you understand me? And what happened was, I think they come in and you know, I still had that thing of that buddy-buddy thing, mm-hmm. you know, because I know you win and everything. We could sit down and we could really talk. And what I was working the midnight shift, you know, and of course we had the kitchen closed at a certain time, right? Mm-hmm. And the girls come to me one night, Dave, listen, can we get some coffee or something? We ought to be able to have some coffee or something. And trying to still be all right, mm-hmm. you know, with everybody. I said, we can go down to the kitchen club, but we can go down and have some coffee. We can't do nothing else but just have the coffee mm-hmm. and everything. And they said, we just get the coffee and then come on out. And I opened the door and let them go down in the kitchen, still trying to be okay, you know. Mm-hmm. But when they got down in the kitchen, what happened was the girl said, one of the girls said, Dave, I'm hungry. She said, what we had for dinner? And I'll never forget, we had pork chops, mashed potatoes, and spinach for dinner, you know? And I said, well, no, we just going to get the coffee. We're not going to mess with none of the food down there. Because I knew that I ain't had no business letting them down there. And the girl said, shit, hungry as I am, I'm going to give me one of these damn pork chops. I don't know what you're talking about. And immediately, I changed. Mm-hmm. I went and barricaded the frigidaire and got up tight. I said, look, I tell you what, ain't nobody getting nothing, and everybody out the goddamn kitchen. Don't touch a damn thing. And one of the other girls said, now, see there, Doreen say, we ain't gonna touch nothing. We just want to get the coffee. Say, now, Bill, why you come down here gonna rank us from getting the coffee and everything? And I said, well, get the damn coffee, let's get the hell out. I would not move from that frigidaire, you understand me? So when I wouldn't move from the frigidaire, they got the coffee and everything, and they went on upstairs, and I looked around, cleaned up, make sure everything was in order and everything. So when I went upstairs, you know, and I put the lock on the door, I said, shh. And when I got upstairs, you know, them girls were sitting there, they was talking about me like a dog. You know, that bitch. They didn't give her a set of keys. Say that police. Oh, I mean, they talked about. Oh, I felt so bad. And for the first time in my life, I felt lonely. Mm. I felt lonesome. You know. Mm. Now I know I've been lonesome before, and I know that, but it never hit me like that. Mm. You know, for the first time in my life, I needed somebody to talk to. Mm. I needed somebody to understand. You know what I was going through with and why I did. Mm. But God wouldn't see it like that. Mm. You know, it was just me. You know? Mm. And I had to sit and I had to listen to that. You know? Mm. So the next morning when the director come in, she asked me, she said, Doreen, how was it last night? I thought it was fine, you know. And I wanted to go out and walk out the office in the hall. Here come the girls down the steps. And somebody said, they go that bitch in there. They get that bitch to some keys. She lost her goddamn mind. And I ran. Backing up. I said, no, Ms. Cox, can I talk to you? She said, yeah. I said, no, it didn't go fine last month. She said, well, what happened? So I explained to her what had happened about me letting them down mm-hmm. the kitchen that day. So she said, well, did you learn something? I said, yeah, mm-hmm. I shouldn't have let them go down the kitchen. She said, okay, fine. She didn't say nothing else. So that night, that next night, here they come again. You know? And they said, hey, Doreen, blah, 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 running off at the mouth. You know, we run off at the mouth. And he said, hey, let's go get some coffee tonight. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, you know what? Y'all, I said, I don't understand, really, you know, why y'all want some coffee. And y'all should have some coffee up here. I said, because y'all should have some kind of refreshments at night, coffee or tea or milk or cooking mm-hmm. or something for y'all. I said, if I was y'all, I said, I got a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. I said I would write this petition mm-hmm. and everybody sign it mm-hmm. and give it to Miss Carson in the morning because I'm not opening that goddamn kitchen tonight. And when I said that, baby, them bitches went, what? It went crazy. I said, that's right. And went on back in the office and put my foot on the desk and just laid back. Well, baby, you know I was everything under the sun. And I had to say to myself, what am I doing wrong? for the first time in my life, somebody entrusted me with something. Mm-hmm. And for the first time in my life, I told my family, and I can do it, and I'm going to have it. You know? And that's what I did. And that's what I did, you know? And from then on, I knew that I had a job. I knew the type of people that I was working with, because I've been there.
Right.
You know, I never once tried to put myself above or like I couldn't understand, because I've been there. I did the same thing. And there was some time that I had felt so lonesome that I needed somebody to talk to. I needed somebody to be with me and understand. But God said, no good. You're going to have to go through this. All of this. You're going to have to go through it. Then I began to learn how to talk to, as we call, square people, you know. And this woman, the director, she was a young woman, you know. And I used to sit in the office and I used to talk to her all the time. Ava Carson. I know she don't mind me calling her name. But she would sit and she would talk to me, you know. And then she had met my family. She told me, what happened to you to make you so different from your family, you know. And I tell her, nothing, you know, I don't know what I told her. But anyway, you know how we are. We don't want people getting in our business. You know, I'm ready to tell her some kind of shit to make her get up off me. But then she started relating to me. She said, I could have been just like you. She said, but I was determined to make something out of myself. Then she shared a few things about her and her family and everything. Well, what made her determined to continue to go on to school, you know, to get her the degree and she was from Virginia, you know. And for the first time in my life, here was somebody that was sharing, talking with me, and not at me, you know, or down to me or anything. She was really sharing. And I never had nobody to really, you know, identify that they could have been just, but instead, she did. And I found myself often talking to her, you know. And we had another ex-addict that used to work there then, too. And what happened is that I used to have to write in the law. And, you know, I didn't go that far in school. But I knew a little something, you know, to keep my head above water. And what I did, I would start off early writing in the law so I could be through by the time I got ready to get off. And a lot of things I would have misspelled, you know. And she came to me one night when I come in, and Ada bought me a dictionary, you know. And she had in the dictionary to Doreen with love. Use it. Take your time and look your words up and spell, you know, and get your sentences right. And I said, oh, thank you. And this girl come in, who was an ex-addict herself, who wasn't using or anything, but dispossessed in attitude, just stunk, you know. So I'm sitting there trying to look at the writing the log and everything and make sure I got my words spelled. And she said, what you doing? What's that you got? I said, dictionary. She said, dictionary. She said, that's cute. She looked at it. And she seen it and they say, well, to Doreen from Ava, use with love. You know. And she said, you mean to tell me that bitch give you this? So I never took that from that bitch. That bitch ain't doing nothing calling you a dumb bitch or something like that. And I say, is that what you say? I don't see that name nowhere. I said, she said, with love. She said, with love. I said, she's trying to help me. She said, oh, shit. And then pushed the book back there. And somehow or another, I began to change. And I began to see things like I've never seen before. I began to start hearing things like I've never heard before. And then I began to start dealing with people like I've never dealt before. You know, because in my shift, I had no trouble. The girls respected me. They know what I said, I meant, and I had to follow this through. You know, a lot of times when I didn't want to, I had to follow this through. So that job really helped me. It really helped me, you know, along. And this was a long time before, you know, I even found the fellowship. This was just in the beginning of me trying to get myself together and do the right things.
So many things I want to ask you. I probably think all these things after we finish. But, okay, so when you first came to the fellowship, they didn't have the basic text and the steps and all of that. So after you did have that, after you all, I guess, worked on those and put the literature together.
No, they had the basic text and they had the literature, but we didn't have them.
Okay.
Jimmy send us these things, you know. When I called you, I got in touch with you, you know.
Okay.
And then when we formed earlier with Virginia and Merle, then we started sending for literature.
Okay.
And we started sending for the basic text, I think, came out a year or two after that,
okay.
or something like
okay.
that, you know. Mm-hmm.
Do you still follow the same basics now that you did when you first got clean? Have a sponsor, go to meetings,
okay.
see things, you know.
Yeah, right. Well, my sponsor is dead now, you know. But I still follow the same basics with the people that I sponsor also. And then, to me, I'm at a point now where, I mean, I talk to my sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going through something, they know it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't pay the great white hope or that I know it all. I let them know when I'm going through some shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But also, when it's ironed out, I let them know how
mm-hmm.
that is, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I keep myself open so they can stay
open
and not
yeah.
hold back.
With
anything, you know, because I would share with them about things, and then I had sponsors like Tina and them when I would leave town and I'd be out there smoking. I mean, I'm smoking when I'd be out there speaking around. And if I'm not there, my sponsors would grit with one another. They one of them get upset and get to crying or get upset about stuff. They'll get on each other's head. Now, you know, if Doreen was here, you wouldn't be doing that shit. You know, you wouldn't be doing that. So and so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just try to stay open, and I never put myself up there where I'm unreachable. You understand me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always here where we can talk. I can always relate to them. And as I begin to grow, too, with things, you know, like my thing now, as you heard me say, talk straight. Talk straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I get into things and I find, you know, if you talk straight, people don't talk straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, why don't you talk straight with people? People don't know which way to go
mm-hmm.
with it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So they either back up or they get the stamina. talk straight. You know,
yeah.
So whatever I got to say, I say it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I say what I mean what I say, and I follow through. And I got the name of being crazy, especially with my family. Yeah, you know how she is. Chat, just leave her alone. She's crazy. I love it. I love it. You know, it don't hurt my feelings or anything about things like that anymore. It don't hurt my feelings. You know? And then I tell my people, get to know who you are, where you are, and what is your purpose in life. Find out about you. You know, the feelings that you got, the emotions. You know, like I was a very deep feeling person, a very sensitive person, and a highly emotional person, you know. And when things begin to rise up with me, I know something was right here, you know. So I may have to stand straight or stand still for a minute. Maybe I may have to take a step two back. That don't mean I got to go all the way back, you know, to find out what doing, why are you jumping to this, what's going on with you, you know. And once I got to know me, and I know how I am, that don't say it didn't stop. You know, because just last month, I'm giving fuck y'all, you know, I'm moving. I'm getting myself out there. Me and my sister say, the old sister say, fuck you. I don't nobody talk to me no any goddamn way. Who in the hell? I'm going to get me a goddamn shit. Y'all, look, everybody, I don't got everybody upset. I got the sweetest daughter-in-law in the world. Well, I'm not up in the mood. I am not that. She does not. You know, and I say, and my sister, yeah, she says she's going to do something. You know she do. They know I will follow through. But, baby, look, and went and asked, went and looked for me and see your sister in the park. And found one that I like, honey. With her said I was getting too much money. I was so glad when they called me and told me, Miss Doreen, I am so sorry. I really wanted you to. It looked like everything eased down to me. Look, I knew my ass wasn't burning. I feel like packing up no shit going no damn way. Me and my older sister. So now I got the cop out. You know. And then my daughter-in-law stopped speaking to me and everything else. And she finally said, yeah, I didn't come over and I wasn't going to help you pack a damn thing and get nothing, you know. But I said, well, y'all know, you know, I just Say, you just fall that hard. You like to have your way. Well, I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. It just comes out of me. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, I'm not a person I can't pretend about nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm wrong, I don't know how to cop. I'll say, yeah, okay, y'all got me this time. So then all my sponsors, they call me prime cut. Doreen, you still move? I said, no. Oh, I'm so glad. Well, what happened? Then I got to come back, you know. So, I mean, life is like, but get to know yourself.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, and you can't go around like you got a halo over here. This is all right, and this you understand. Hell no, sometimes I don't want to understand. You know, sometimes I want to stay in the shit I am. But believe me, I ain't staying that damn long. Because I don't like these people. All right, Dorian, get up and do what you got to do, you know, face up. And I said, you know, you're only human. And things are going to, shit is going to be happening. But that don't mean you got to bite and you got to jump in, you know. And then you not only learn yourself, but you read other people. You can tell when somebody come to you, they ain't like, I don't let nobody come to me sideways, Dorian, you know. What is she talking about? You know, I'm going to press your ass to that damn wall, you know. Because you won't give it to me loud and clear, you know. And then I don't mind speaking my mind. And sometimes I don't want to say what I got to say. And I said, look, I done told you now, just leave it alone. And I said, well, okay. And I said, well, why are you telling this all out? I said, I've been trying to spare you goddamn feelings, but now you're getting on my damn nerves, you know? And you got to know it. So I got the name of being crazy, but I love it. You know, because I refuse to go along with your shit. You know, and I refuse to watch you die, you know? So you may hate me today, but you love me tomorrow. And that's my philosophy with life.
Yeah.
You know, and I love it. I just love the way my life is, you know. And the older I get, I feel like the more wise I get to things, you know.
Yeah.
And don't try to put me on no pedestal, you know, like I'm walking on water. You know what I'm saying? I do not play that, you know. And I have been through enough in life, you know, that I know it's only through the grace that I'm still here. You know, I done died and gone. You know, when you're waking up, you know, and you hear somebody singing your name, and you running through some white clouds, you know, I was really going to try to stay where I was. And when I woke up, there was a priest standing over me, giving me my last breath. You know, and doctors and nurses all around me. And when I look to go back into these things, I know I was gone. You know, but it's only through the grace that he just wasn't ready for me. You know? And there have been some experiences that have happened to me in my life, you know. And I mean, when I sit back and I take inventory, man, I can just jump up and run around this room saying, thank you. You know, I mean, God left me here for a reason. And that's why I'm not going to play with your life, and I'm not going to let you play with mine. And when I say I'm not here to win no popularity contest with you, what's got to be said, it's got to be said. You know, I mean, what I say, but then how I say it. And I'm fine enough. A way to ease it off to you. But if it don't look like it'll be eased off, it's going to be
eased off. One of the things that you said, I'm glad that you did, because for me in closing, the part about not putting people on the pedestal, you know, one of the things that this conference has done for me is just show me that predecessors, that we're all the same in here. And sometimes we just need to hear that. We need to hear that we're all the same. And that God, whatever it is that I think I've gone through, look how many times you must have gone through it. And you're still here, and I guess because doing the same things that we do when we first get here. It's people like yourself, though, that give the people behind you hope, though. So.
But let me tell you one thing. People have come up to me with some of the damnest shit. I was coming out of the room, and the little girl, I seen the fella and his wife looking at me, and all of a sudden, I run on out the room. You know how you can feel when somebody's looking. And I go out the room, and the fella come in, say, are you the mother? Are you the mother? I turn around and look. I say, yeah, they call me the mother. Said, yeah, this is it, come here, come here, come here. And the little girl came out there, she said, oh, mother, I'm so glad I met you before you died. Oh, God, baby, so am I. And I was so And then I was out in California one time, I just got to speak it, and all these people grabbing around, you know, when you get to speak it, and this fella come up to me. I mean, he looked like, I don't know what, but he rushed to the family cup for me. He said, Miss Doreen, I said, yeah, I have to say this to you. I said, well, what is it, babe? I'm looking around and saying, seeing what the hell, you know, what the hell going on here? And all the people around me got crowd got real solid, you know. He said, have you ever heard of Johnny Appleby? I said, who? I said, what the hell is Johnny? So he said, well, let me tell you, the whole place on that hall just got quiet. And he started telling the story about Johnny Appleby. They went around playing these apple seeds all around. And he looked, he said, and you are a Johnny Appleby. Baby, everybody was crying. Coming down. I said, oh, shit. I mean, it was too much for me, you know. But I always try to keep myself, you know, a balance. Or not let things get to my head, or let nobody take me where I ain't supposed to be.
Yeah, goddamn.
You know, I am not walking on no goddamn water. You know what I'm saying? And hits me, I'm going to get out, you know. And if you get out of the line, I'm going to tell you to go to hell or whatever, you know. I mean, I'm just here, and I just thank God for giving me the energy, and I thank God for giving me you kids, you know, to have, because that's what keeps me going through all of it, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all of us here together.
Fine.
You know, y'all tell me how much y'all do for y'all, and how much y'all do for me. Just seeing you, you know, going and let you know every struggle is a struggle. It's all right. Just keep the faith and just keep on going.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way you get stronger within. You know, within yourself. You know, and your faith begins to come, you know, you become to believe. And you know what God done brought you through, you know, and how you get. And it's only through the grace that I can tell you that I'm going to get my God now, you know. And like I said, unless I can see the goodness of the Lord amongst the land of the living, then I believe. And when I come into this fellowship, this is where I see the goodness of the Lord among the land of the living, and I do believe. Because I've seen so many miracles and so many things happen with you kids in here. And that's what does my heart so good, you know. And I do believe, so just keep on coming back, lady. I hope I gave y'all enough shit.
I think you have. Well, thank you so much. Did you want to say thank you?